Afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly meeting. And as always, I send special greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, from Singapore at one end of the world all the way around to the Kingdom of Sweden on the other, all the ships and the aircraft in between. And all of Captain Joe's people busy about their father's business, whatever that business may be. The binnacle list this week does not have any huge additions to it. And what I am, of course, always hopeful is that people are leaving the binnacle list because they have been... Because they are well, they have gotten better, and then they are able to return at least to light duty. One of the people that I keep track of is a person that I call Alert Emeritus. And I call him that because he is the former commanding officer of the Coast Guard Cutter Alert. And since he is no longer her captain, he is in the emeritus stage. And he had several things going on all at one time. And when he was able to solve those, he was quick to tell me to remove him from the binnacle list. The crewman, my friend Captain Truman O'Brien, who is a retired Alaska Airlines 737 captain, has been wanting me to join the ranks of those who are boat owners. He is a boat owner himself, along with an aircraft owner, an airplane owner. And he proclaimed when I first knew him that once he retired from flying for Alaska Airlines, that he was never going to own an airplane again. He never was going to fly again, in fact. And I said, well, are you going to at least keep your ticket up, keep your stay current? And he said, no, Captain Joe, I'm not even going to do that. Well, imagine my dismay when he eventually bought not only one airplane, but two, one of which he very skillfully put into the top of some trees about a year ago. And we've talked about that at some length on this program, an incredible piece of skillful airmanship. And there I'm not trying to be flip. It was indeed a piece of really skillful airmanship. And Truman likes to say that there was some luck in it, but Truman, you and I both know that there was not much luck in that. Anyway, Truman has been wanting me to join the ranks of those, and he knew that I was interested in that because every spring I go through the boat lust. And one spring, all of this is to tell you that I am taking a look at a boat when I come back from my next trip, which I will talk about in just a minute. And I'm taking a look at a boat which may just be the right one. It doesn't have much in the way of electronics, which means that I'm going to have to use paper charts, a magnetic compass, and... I have kept all of my skills alive in those areas, and I do not intend to buy an electronic charting system should I buy this boat. Anyway, about 5 years ago, a boat came on the market, and it was for sale by a friend, and we'll call him John. We'll call him John because that was and is his name. And John had this 30-footer 30-foot sloop for sale. And I figured that 30 feet was about the most that I would want to single hand. And it was single hand because Mary R. was not a very good swimmer, and she was not comfortable in the water. And she could see sailboats off of Captain's Quarters heeling over in a smart breeze. And she was afraid that they were just going to keep on rolling over. And I told her that, I said, Mary R., I've been sailing since I was 12. I learned in Snipes, which is not a very good trainer. And it's a racing class. It's an Olympic racing class, or it used to be. And so I learned in Snipes and have sailed everything from 12-foot tech dinghies all the way up through Eagle, the Coast Guard training ship, the Bark Eagle. So, but my insistence that I knew exactly what I was doing in all circumstances did not completely convince her. So this boat came on the market, 30-foot sloop, and I figured I could single-hand a 30-foot because I didn't think I'd have much company, at least not from Mary R. So out we went, and our daughter Heather was with us. And so the three of us were guests with John, and we cleared his moorings, and he said, Captain Joe, the boat is yours. And so we set sail, a main and a jib, and I refreshed my recollection of all of those wonderful commands that you get to to sing out, and it was a glorious day. And then John said, he said, Captain, I have to get back in because I have a meeting. So we're going to motor. And he lit off the engine, which was a lovely little Volvo Penta, a little Volvo Penta four-cylinder diesel. And we started heading in. And we were about maybe a third of the way into Quartermaster Harbor, to the marina at Quartermaster Harbor. And Heather noticed that there was some smoke coming up out of the engine compartment. And she pointed this out to me, and I pointed it out to John. And John said, oh, yeah, the intercooler, the cooler that cools the cooling water, which in turn is cooled by salt water, is clogged up, and I haven't had a chance to fix it. So we'll just shut the engine down, and we'll sail. We'll let it cool off, and then we'll start it up again. And so that's how we got back home, was starting the engine, running until smoke would arise from overheating, shut it down, sail. And we went through this cycle a couple of times until we were snugged up alongside. And so we pulled, when we got into Quartermaster Harbor, John had a couple of minutes. And so we pulled the cover off the engine, and I noticed that he had put this engine in himself, and he had installed it with some of the vital components that needed servicing down underneath the engine rather than up on top or on the side where you could get to them. And in order to change any of the filters, or in particular to clean out that intercooler, apparently it was down underneath such that we would have to lift the engine up off the foundation, off of the bedding, in order to get to them to service it. So I said, John, I don't think that I really want to take on a boat that I need to hoist the engine up off the bed in order to service it. And as we were driving home, Mary R. said, Joseph, and she called me Joseph whenever she did all the time. But there was a tone of voice which told me that this was a subject of some intensity with her. She said, you're not going to buy that boat, are you? And I said, no, Mary R., I'm not going to buy that boat. And she said, and I said, because I don't want to have a boat where I can't service it unless I lift the engine up off of the foundations. And she said, well, I'm certainly glad to hear that, because I noticed that all of the cushions needed to be reupholstered, and I knew who was going to get that job. And, of course, she was right. If I had bought the boat, then she would have just been happily busily going away with the sewing machine, putting new covers on all of the cushions. So I didn't buy the 30-foot sloop. And this one, I haven't looked at it yet. That is going to happen when I come back from my next trip. And so my next trip is to Virginia and to Maryland. There are a lot of people that who are family, friends of family rank, and shipmates that I have not seen since Mary R. died, and that I cannot, and they cannot come here. So I've made several trips already to see these people, and this is my next one. So I'm going to go to Maryland and Virginia. And so next week, I will be broadcasting someplace from the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I will be working with Truman. Truman will be engineering for me from here. And as I feel that I have a contract with each one of Captain Joe's people to deliver from the captain's chair every week, live, unscripted, and unrehearsed. And so we've now broadcast from a number of different places, and we're going to broadcast this particular one. We'll be coming to you from the Commonwealth of Virginia, where I'm going to be spending some time with my two sisters. And these are people, my two sisters, we have not been together, the three of us, since I think maybe as much as 10 years. That's really unfortunate, because the only reason is distance. There are no antagonisms amongst us. It is a very loving relationship. It is constructed out of both mutual affection and respect, and I'm really looking forward to that. So on to other regular features. I've got two requests to fulfill. The first one is from my radioman friend Bernie, who lives across Puget Sound from Point Robinson Lighthouse. And he listened to a broadcast in which we talked a little bit about the Great Lakes and shipping on the Great Lakes. And his query was, I think I've got this right, Bernie, it is because your signals for a radioman, sometimes your signals do not come through loud and clear to the Andyphone, which is my handheld cellular telephone. But I think your question is, or your comment was, that you'd like to hear a little bit more about shipping on the Great Lakes. And so here's the answer, which I believe you're asking, and that is that about in the late 1970s, a project was started among the Army Corps of Engineers, which operates the locks at Sault Ste. Marie, the Coast Guard, the Lake Carriers Association, which is the trade association for all of the companies that own shipping on the Great Lakes, and the various shipping companies to operate all winter long and to move iron ore in the form of taconite is iron ore pellets, so that it can be shipped in particular in the wintertime. And to ship iron ore from Duluth, which is the railhead for the Mesabi mine, and all the way down to the mill towns on the south shore of Lake Erie. This project ran for several years, I believe four or five. I was directly involved with it for three. One is the captain of the Coast Guard cutter Northwind, which I had in the Antarctic the winter before, and then the following winter I took her up through the St. Lawrence Seaway and into the Great Lakes, and ran her running convoys of loaded ore boats from Duluth all the way down to the Cleveland area, and then the empties in ballast headed back up. And then the following 2 years after that, when I was the commander in the Sioux, I was managing it from the shoreside, my part of it from the shoreside, which included the St. Mary's River, which is a very relatively complicated waterway. By the end of the winter where I had north wind there, I could have written a pilot's exam for the St. Mary's River and the locks. I'd been up and down that waterway so many times. And so we ran that for at least 4 years, maybe more than that. And during that time, the objective of the exercise was to see whether or not we could do it if we had to in a time of national emergency. We found that we could do it. We found that it was very expensive in terms of fuel consumption, in terms it eats up people because you are you have to keep ships moving so that they don't freeze in. So you're working under the lights, and many of the ore boat captains did not like to work under the lights. And it was also very risky because you're working not only at night, but you're working very, very close to these ships. You have to form them up into convoys of 10, 12, 13 ships in a convoy, and then keep them moving for 24 hours a day until you get them down to their destination. There's a wonderful photograph of that was taken from a high building in Cleveland, which shows Northwind rounding up a convoy, getting them all ready to head north and head back, rather not necessarily north, but upstream and upbound, and back to Duluth in ballast. And it was like a sheepdog rounding up all of her sheep. So we did that in the late 70s. We've not repeated it since then. The locks at the Sioux had to remain open for that period. And now, of course, we closed the locks. They shut down this year on the 16th of January, and they will open sometime in March. And so there's very little traffic moving in the Great Lakes right now, and this winter is not nearly as cold as some of the winters that we had during the time of the season extension project. I've got a lot more. I've got a lot of stories about that particular operation. And as more thinking and questions come out about it, I will I'll have more to say about it, because it was just a fascinating operation. And my wonderful Northwind and my wonderful crew, we operated 95% of the time with engines turning. And the only time that we stopped was to pull into fuel. And that was either in the Sioux on one end or in Cleveland on the other. And, of course, we were burning up fuel at a prodigious rate because we were breaking ice that whole time. The second question that I have is from a person who would like to be a new listener to the Coast Guard Channel. And so maybe a few groups here about the Coast Guard Channel itself. I only belong to two so-called social media outlets, and one of them is LinkedIn. And I belong to that because there's so many people with whom I have both personal or professional dealings who are linked in. And so it's a connection there. And also it is useful when I meet somebody who is new to me, but who has professional accomplishments. I look them up on LinkedIn. I confess that. And that is the only one of that sort that I use. I do not have a Facebook page. I have never looked at a Facebook page. And I proclaim here loud and clear from the captain's chair on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. I proclaim here loud and clear that I never will have a Facebook account. My grandchildren in particular say, I really should. Cappy, you really should have a Facebook page because you're missing so many good things. And I said, well, the only reason I'm missing those things is that you don't send them to me some other way, which means that I get pictures and things like that sent to me in other ways. And every now and then I get a letter in the mail with a stamp. And sometimes, even better, I get a visitation. One of my grandsons is coming to spend a few days with me later this week from Alaska. Ezra is coming from Alaska to spend a few days with me. And it warms the cockles of this old sea captain's heart. And as a grandfather in particular, that these young people want to come here. They want to spend some time on the magical isle of Vashon. And the price that they have to pay for that is that they have to spend some time with their grandpa. And we have a good time. We get some work done. If they are old enough to drive vehicles, they get to drive my motor pool vehicles. It's just a wonderful thing, and it is just so heartwarming that they want to do this, and when I get one of those phone calls, Grandpa, can we come down and spend some time with you? We always make sure that we are able to accommodate that. So the second one is the Coast Guard Channel. And I work with a small group of other people to manage the Coast Guard Channel. My contribution to that particular group is the least of the rest of them. My contribution is mostly pontification from the captain's chair. But Mike Morgan is a person who is eligible to belong. He is a Coast Guardsman. In fact, he was with me up in the Great Lakes. And after he left Northwind, he went to electrician's mate school, and he did his time in the Coast Guard, and then went to work for a company called Brunswick that makes Sea Ray boats, and I believe that Mike was involved with Sea Ray boats. So, Mike, the way that you get onto the Coast Guard Channel is the website is community.coastguardchannel, all one word, .com. community.coastguardchannel.com. Go on to that, and you will see the information that you need to put down to establish your relationship with the Coast Guard, because it is for Coast Guard people, and Coast Guard people and people who are interested in the Coast Guard. And it is a wonderful, wonderful program. And I have to say that the kind of support that the members thereof provide to other members is one of the most important things about the Coast Guard Channel. When Mary R. died, I put the word out on the channel, and I was flooded with not only expressions of affection, respect, and support, but also people were telling me stories about their own experiences with the sudden loss of a spouse. And so we help each other out a lot, and I am happy to pass this on to Mike, community.coastguardchannel.com. In other things that we need to cover this afternoon, I had a communication from the Department of Veterans Affairs. It was addressed to John Wubold. And that leads me to wonder, the Social Security number was correct, or the last four digits is the way they do it now. That was correct. So I wonder who this John fellow is that's using my Social Security account number. In any case, I need to get that corrected because I am a full-fledged member of the veterans community. I'm registered with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and I urge everyone, whether you have a disability or not, to register with the Department of Veterans Affairs, because your situation may change dramatically. It may change quickly. In particular, if you are in any of the ships or units that were exposed to Agent Orange, even if you have not displayed any of the symptoms, I urge you to get onto the Agent Orange register. And so the second thing that came to me from the Department of Veterans Affairs was a notice saying that there are some changes coming to the disability rating system. And again, all veterans should be registered with the Department of Veterans Affairs. And if you are exhibiting symptoms that you think may be service-connected, or you don't know if they're service-connected, go to a Department of Veterans Affairs facility, find the service officer, the one that I used to establish my own situation with Agent Orange was with the Veterans of Foreign Wars. You do not have to be a VFW member, although I am a life member of the VFW. And get yourself on that register, because these disability rating changes look to me as if they are making a couple of things like hearing loss a little bit easier to manage. And many of you who served in engine rooms and many of you who were on deck on buoy tenders, especially the ones that drove piles, drove spuds, you may well have a hearing loss which is service-connected, and you can only determine that if you go to your DVA facility and get it checked out. Marine traffic today is the Tug Vision. She's U.S. flag. She's on the federal anchorage with a barge, the federal anchorage just off of Captain's Quarters. And she's interesting today to me today because she is one of these tugs that fits into the notch on the stern of the barge. This particular barge has a bow and a stern, and in the stern there's a notch, and the tug fits right into that notch. And then they are locked together with steel cables. And the first time that I saw this particular arrangement was up in the Great Lakes. I saw a lot of things in the Great Lakes. It was a wonderful experience for me to shift from being a blue water sailor to being a freshwater sailor and going up into the lakes. And the first time that I saw one of these tug-barge combinations was in the Great Lakes, and that was with an arrangement called Presque Isle. And Presque Isle is still, I believe, running. My friend and colleague, John and his son, Cody, will let me know if that's true. I believe Presque Isle is still running, and the combination of the two is almost 1,000 feet long, a really big rig. And so when you see one of these, you'll notice that the pilot house is way up high, and that's so that the captain up on the in the pilot house is able to see over the barge and out in front of the barge. So I could not tell from both looking at her and also looking at the photographs whether she has a pilot house which can be extended. Some tugs have this. And the other interesting thing about her is that she belongs to an old line Pacific Northwest company called Crowley Red Stack Tugs. And I have a friend and colleague here on the island who is a retired skipper with Crowley Red Stack. So that's who we've got out on the federal anchorage today. And last week, I talked a little bit about receiving fake mailings in the email traffic, and I just got one. But before I tell you about that, I have to say that several other people connected with the Voice of Vashon apparently also have received them, because the executive director for the Voice, the lovely Kate, put out a warning for all of us to not open things that look suspicious. So I got one in my post, my email yesterday, purporting to be from the United States Postal Service, and boy, did it look legitimate, until I read very carefully the language of what they were telling me. And what they were telling me was that they tried to deliver a parcel, and they weren't able to do it, and I need to check that box and let my postmaster know when I'm going to come up to the post office here on the Magical Isle and pick that up. Well, fellow, whoever you are, I'm not going to do that, because I don't have a little pink slip in my post box. Actually, here in the Pacific Northwest. Those are salmon-colored slips. And it is time once again for me to say that all too quickly we have come to the end of our time together. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair and on station and watching properly. And next week I'll be talking to you from the Commonwealth of Virginia.